RaymondJames.com.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Our guest today is Mark Katchus, the executive director of the Tampa Bay Times. He's been on the job since the end of August of last year. Katchus most recently worked at the Oregonian in Portland, Oregon's largest newspaper. Before that, he was the editorial director at the Center for Investigative Reporting in California, where he teamed up with the Tampa Bay Times and CNN in 2013. To produce a project called America's Worst Charities. He's worked at several other newspapers, including the Orange County Register, the Los Angeles Daily News, and the Peninsula Times Tribune in Palo Alto. Mark earned a BA in journalism from San Jose State University and a diploma in social sciences from Flinders University in Australia. Did I get that mostly right,
yeah,
sir?
Yeah, good. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming by, Mark. First of all, I want to ask you, but when I pick up the paper these days, it's a lot thinner. The Tampa Bay Times is a lot thinner. What's going on?
Well, look, it's a challenging time for the newspaper business. We are still the largest newsroom in the state of Florida. We deliver more newspapers than any other newspaper in the state of Florida, have one of the healthiest circulations across the country. And we have a unique ownership structure that allows us to keep most of the profits at the Times when we have profits. But that doesn't mean that there aren't immense challenges that we face. And it's expensive to produce a newspaper. In the olden days, when you had, you know, fat classified advertising sections that were basically allowing you to mint money, you didn't have to worry about the high cost of producing a newspaper. But now, it's got to the point where with ads diminishing, I mean, part of the reason why it's thinner is advertisers have other ways that they can reach their audience, right? Mm-hmm. The other reason it's thinner is that there are fewer readers reading the paper who are supporting you with circulation revenue. And we have to make tough decisions. I just recently made a decision to cut some of our comics. We were running two full pages of comics in the newspaper, but I was spending $250,000 a year. You could buy a house, Rob.
Yeah.
For $250,000 a year. Every year I was paying that for comics and puzzles. So I had to make the decision to invest in journalism, and that was where I was going to take that money that I was spending on comics and puzzles and put it towards keeping some reporters employed.
What kind of response did you get when you downsized comics and puzzles?
Well, it wasn't totally surprising, right? I mean, I'd always been told, maybe you've heard this, that you don't mess with the comics. When you get into my job, you don't mess with the comics. It's like touching the third rail, right? Well, I touched the third rail and I came out alive, but not without a few bruises, right? Comics and the puzzles were the main. We made a lot of changes, and that was a lot that we gave readers in the last few weeks had to adjust to. We combined the main news and the local section into one section. We moved some features around, but we cut a page of comics and we cut two crossword puzzles. We were probably the only newspaper in America that was giving people three traditional crossword puzzles a day, right? So we took two away and we went down to one traditional crossword puzzle and people lost their minds.
Which raises a question to me, like, could you do a whole newspaper based on crossword puzzles and comics and make money?
Well, that is interesting, but I don't know if you could, really, because this is really commodity content. I mean, you can go online right now. You tell me what your favorite comic is. I'll show you how to get there, and you could see it for free online, right? Every comic that's out there is available online. Crossword puzzles you can download online. There's other ways that it's commodity content. Right. So for us, probably have to, at some point in the future, we got to get out of the commodity content business so we could focus on the differentiators for us.
As long as we're on the topic, is the Far Side coming back and will you carry it?
Okay, would love to have the Far Side back. Absolutely. When I heard that the Far Side was coming back, it was like, okay, well, how do we get the Far Side back? Gary Larson's going to come back apparently in 2020. He's going to start online only. But we'll open up a spot for the Far Side.
Well, we're talking with Mark Katchus, who has been on the job at the Tampa Bay Times as its executive editor since last August. And we're on video, too. You can see this on Facebook video on the WMNF News website. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to send in a question via email, send us a question. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. This topic came up, and you mentioned it a moment ago. A lot of people don't understand the ownership structure at the Tampa Bay Times and its relationship with the Poynter Institute. Describe what that relationship is.
Yeah. Well, Nelson Poynter owned the St. Petersburg Times, and when he passed away, he created an institute called the Media Institute, which became the Poynter Institute for Media Studies. They're our owner. We are owned by a nonprofit. The Tampa Bay Times is a for-profit newspaper, but we are owned by Poynter. It's a very unique ownership structure. I've worked at newspapers that were owned by small chains or medium-sized chains or a bit larger chains, and I'll tell you, it's great to work for a nonprofit that gives us the independence that you want.
You have greater independence, you think,
huge.
Than at a chain?
Oh, immense. I mean, one of the frustrations that I had working at chains was that cookie cutter decisions get made for you thousands of miles away. I mean, that happened at the very first newspaper job I worked at, which was the Peninsula Times Tribune you mentioned, was owned by the Tribune Company. It was an afternoon daily newspaper that shut down in 1993 in Palo Alto, California. But a lot of the management decisions were being made from afar by executives at Tribune Tower in Chicago, and you know, they basically drove that product into the ground. You know, other chains will make decisions like what the newspaper is going to look like, what your website's going to look like. And the beauty of the Times and our relationship with Poynter, we have great independence to make all the decisions. We control our own destiny, and that's a great thing, and it also could be a scary thing.
I got to ask you, because a caller asked me this question the other day, which way does the money go? Does the Poynter Institute have so much money that it gives money to the paper these days, or does the paper make so much money that it gives money to Poynter, or do neither have money?
Well, honest answer is we have separate budgets, right? So the Times has a budget, and we manage to it. Whatever's left over at the end of the year, we use to pay off our debt and put money into our pension fund. And Poynter has its own budget. It's totally independent. We don't kick money up to Poynter. Poynter doesn't send money down to us. They operate separately. So it's a very, very unique structure that way.
Yeah, this is a National Give Day around the country. People are giving to nonprofits. And I know that the Times has started its own investigative fund, and you're asking for money for the investigative fund. Do people give money and get a tax break, or is that just money to fund the process of investigative journalism?
You do get a tax break. And that is one way where our relationship with Poynter is also really, really beneficial, because the money goes to Poynter. Poynter then acts as our fiscal sponsor and keeps a little bit of admin money, but then sends 93 cents of every dollar to us so that we can apply that to investigative reporting. This is a new form of revenue generation that we're seeing across the country. Miami, the same week that we launched our investigative fund, unbeknownst to us, and they're a good partner of ours, they started a similar fund. The Seattle Times is doing this as well, with a goal of raising several million dollars to expand their investigative team. Now, we already have, fortunately for us and fortunately for our readers, the largest investigative team in the state of Florida. In fact, when I got here, we've actually increased the size of our investigative reporting team. But we'd like to make sure that that is sustained and that we can add to it and continue to do the great watchdog journalism that is a trademark of the Tampa Bay Times.
And the Miami Herald having broken all those stories about Jeffrey Epstein, and the Times having its share of great investigative reporting, including a prominent Republican who was involved in the housing scandal here a few years ago. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and our guest is Mark Katchus. He is the executive editor at the Tampa Bay Times. And if you want to email a question or comment, and you can email it into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. I want to read some numbers from Pew Research Center. These came out just a few days ago. Newsroom employment in the U.S. dropped by 25%. Over the past decade, and we're talking about all newsrooms, newspaper, radio, broadcast, TV, cable. The numbers went from 114,000 newsroom employees to 86,000 newsroom employees over a decade from 2008 to 2018, mm-hmm. a 28,000 job loss. The greatest decline in newsroom employment has occurred at newspapers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge problem. A lot of people want to know. They used to see the bylines of some of their favorite people. They no longer see those bylines in the Times. What's going on?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I'll actually argue that readers don't pay as much attention to bylines as you might think. But I will say that, look, the Times has been an amazing newsroom to work, and we've had some extraordinarily talented people leave us on their own terms, to go do other things. And we've had some, so people are always going to come and go. Now, we've had some layoffs in the last several years, like every other news organization across the country has experienced. So we've lost some folks. And it's always really, really difficult and tough to say goodbye to tremendously talented people. And I feel like at the size newsroom we're at, we're getting to that point, and I think a lot of other executive editors will tell you the same thing, that you're kind of getting down to the bone here. You're cutting to the bone. And what we want to do is find that path to sustainability for us so that we could continue to keep our journalists employed, do great work serving this community, and be here for the long haul.
What's the future? Are you sustainable right now? Or do you think that the future, that you've reached bottom and that things are beginning to turn around?
Yeah, I will tell you candidly that I think that it's going to be a rocky roller coaster ride for as long as I'm in this business, for as long as many of us are in this business. It's a tough, tough, tough business. And we still haven't, nor have anybody else really, completely figured this out. Now, you got to take the New York Times and the Washington Post out of the equation because they're completely separate animals. Wall Street Journal, too, right? The national news outlets. But the local journalism news organizations like ours, like the Miami Herald, which now McClatchy, owned by McClatchy now, is going to cut circulation days at the Bradenton paper. And it's going to do that at other newspapers that it owns across the country. The local journalism scene is a different animal altogether, and no one has quite figured out the secret recipe to make it completely sustainable. So we have ideas, and we're putting some in place. A part of that has to be we've got to get better as a digital news operation. We've got this amazing newspaper, right? 12 Pulitzer Prizes, great newspaper that has been beautifully tended by this incredible staff. But we haven't completely risen up the digital products that we've got to bring them on the same pedestal. And we really need to do that. And we have to diversify our abilities to reach people. So we've been trying to do that. We've doubled, almost tripled the size of our digital staff over the last year. We've introduced new newsletters. We've introduced new podcasts and learned some things from those. We've introduced some other new products in the digital space because we have to figure out a way to reach that broader Tampa Bay audience and even maybe even a little bit beyond that with digital platforms.
So I had a group of high school students in this very studio a few days ago, and I asked them, do you read newspapers? And they said, yes. And I said, well, do you read newspapers, the physical paper, you know, this thing that sounds like that, or do you look on your phone? And they all said, we look on our phones.
Right.
I said, what do you read? They read the New York Times. They read the Washington Post. These were, you know, some pretty advanced kids. But I wonder, the story I hear about the Tampa Bay Times is that when it comes to digital readership, your digital readership lags behind that of the New York Times, the Washington Post, as a percentage of your potential readers.
Absolutely true. No. Candidly, there's no doubt about that, right? We've put so much focus on creating an amazing print product, and because of that, we have a better print product than a lot of other newspapers in America today, okay? But we have lagged a little bit in the digital space. We were late to launch a paywall. We didn't have a great publishing platform. Now we do. We just redesigned the site last November, which is much more elegant, clean, easier to navigate, more functional website. Still, it's going to take time to grow. So we added over 13,000 digital subscribers since we launched a pay meter in March. I know newspaper-run newsrooms that took 3 or 4 years to get to that level. But now they're at 30 or 40,000, right? We need to get to 50,000 or beyond to get to the point where we feel really good about where we want to be. And our overall audience is lower than it ought to be for a news brand like the Tampa Bay Times. In the digital space.
I know a lot of people can scam, use their cell phones, go search privately on their cell phones and get articles for free, or they use multiple computers so that if they like reading the Times, but they don't want to pay for it, they just use a different device, and once, you know, they figure out a way. Maybe, can you get 10 free ones from the Tampa Bay Times right now to start with?
So we adjust the meter all the time. There's different things that we're trying. There is no set number, right? But, you know, to your point, I mean, come on. I mean, that's like just, why should we be giving it away? Why should people have the expectation that it's free?
You know, because there are a lot of people that do that because we're cheap. As human beings, we're cheap. Some of us aren't paid very well. So
sure.
What do you say to people that have figured out a way to read the newspaper but don't pay for it?
Essentially, you got to understand that if that's your mindset, you're not going to have a newspaper or a news organization like the Tampa Bay Times here for generations to come. Our survival is based on our ability to charge consumers for the news that we produce. It is an extraordinarily expensive product. Let me just talk a little bit about that for a second. So newspaper-wide, we got about 140 people in the newsroom who start with a blank slate every day and fill up a newspaper. It goes through a production process. There's advertising, salespeople selling advertising. You know how this all works. Then it goes to the press, and a whole different crew is running a press, and then they're packaging and bundling it up, and a whole bunch of contractors are distributing the newspaper to an area that's larger than the size of Delaware and Rhode Island combined. Okay, we have a massive geographic footprint here, but it costs money to make that happen. And it's not a heck of a lot cheaper in the digital space, right? So we can't expect that all of the work that goes into producing the news that we do should just be given away. People have had the expectation because we grew up with newspapers that cost a dime, right? Newspapers didn't have to charge a lot of money because they were chock full of advertising. And now I still get people who complain about the price of their subscription, annual subscription, which pencils out to 85 cents a day. You know, I mean, what can you do with 85 cents a day? You can buy a pack of gum, you could buy a cheap cup of coffee, and you can get a newspaper that's put together by about 700 total people. You know, almost every one of them touches the paper in some capacity during the day, right, to make it work, not just the journalists, but ad salespeople, circulation people, press room. It's all put together, and then we start over the next day and do another one, right? It's a very labor-intensive product to produce, and there's this expectation out there that, well, you know, you're rolling in dough or it shouldn't cost me that much. Think about it. How much product do you know in this area that gets made by 700 people and then hand-delivered to that massive geographic region and is just given away? And we can't have that mindset in the digital space either. We really, really have to figure out a way to generate the revenue to cover the costs of doing what we do.
Back in the day when newspapers were healthy, especially when the Tampa Tribune was healthy here in the Tampa Bay area and the St. Pete Times was healthy, there were reporters assigned to city council, one reporter to city council, one reporter to the county commission, one reporter to the hospitals, one to the school mm-hmm. district. I mean, you had all the beats covered, to the police yep. and everything else, the State Bureau, both the Miami Herald, even the Tampa Tribune, the St. Pete Times, had a bunch of reporters going up there every session, sure. covering things and generating a lot of stories. The newspaper was thick. What happens to our democracy as the number of reporters on the beats declines?
Well, I think that is the scariest part, right? Because we've seen as 28,000 newspaper jobs disappeared over the last decade. Newspapers are closing across the country. Newspapers are stopping to deliver the paper certain days of the week. That's going to start to create news deserts that are going to create a void of information that somebody's going to fill. Now, who's going to fill it? And will it be a reputable and credible and believable source of information? So that, I mean, look, the press is, I think, the only occupation in the Bill of Rights that's cited by occupation with a protection, right? I mean, the only other jobs that are even mentioned in the Constitution are government jobs, but the press is singled out. And it was important for our founding fathers to create an independent press and to have an independent press. And it's more important than ever that we have an independent press, but it's threatened by the decline in the industry. And now we're working very hard to make sure that we're going to be here for a long time to come.
Mark, we agreed to do a 24-minute interview. We're down to the last 2 minutes, and I have about 50 questions I'd like to ask you. But let me ask you just one, and that is, will the newspaper be here 3 years from now, do you think?
You know, I'm not a good predictor of these kinds of things. I've been in this business now for 35 years, and ever since the early parts of the 2000s, people were saying, you know, 5 more years. That timeline keeps moving out. It does scare me that you're starting to see more circulation days fall across the country. It's a little unnerving to see that happen. I believe that there will be a printed product for many years to come in Tampa Bay because we have such a robust base of subscribers, right? Will it be every day? At some point, maybe not, you know, but when will that be? Is that in 3 years? I don't think so. Is it in 10, 15, 20? I don't know. I can't really predict that. The things that are happening in this business, it's so disruptive, you really don't know where we're headed, right? But I would say we're going to be here for a long time to come. And even then, that's part of the reason why we have to get better at digital, to meet that day when there won't be a print paper every day of the week. And that will happen at some point. Just don't know when.
Mark, I wish we had more time, but thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If people want to write to you at the Times, how can they write to you?
Yeah. Well, thanks for asking. I've had no trouble having people find me because I had 2,000 emails in my inbox from people who were upset about comics and puzzles, but it's mkatches, K-A-T-C-H-E-S, at tampabay.com. It's the best way to reach me.
Mark Katchis, executive editor at the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks a lot for coming by WMNF.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And remember that you can see this video on the WMNF News Facebook page. This is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa.
Arna zarno shan, aringa batsire. ingoromera ingoromera wani arina zvanoshana aringabatsire zuva nezuva aritonge matare ingoromera
arina zvanoshana aringabatsire
zuva nezuva achitonge matare chibhakera
achina zvatinoshana achingabatsire
zuva nezuva aritonge matare kuna mombe
arina zvanoshana aringabatsire
from Oliver Mitsukudzi right here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Mark Hatches, interview is going to be on our Facebook website soon, and you'll be able to watch it back. Thanks to DT, our operations director, for videotaping that. There were a lot of questions I wanted to ask Mark, and he and I agreed that he would do 24 minutes with us, so I promise that if he accepts an invitation to come back, we'll bring him back and we'll ask him some more questions. We're going to talk about some other issues in the news. I'll open up the phone lines in just a moment. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. I want to just mention a few things about what's going on in Washington and a few things that are going on here, and then we'll see where you want to take the conversation. Ukraine's leader is speaking out about the summer phone call that spurred the impeachment inquiry of President Trump. Here's a report that we got. It looks like it's not there, so I will find it. We're going to take a music break right now. This is WMNF in Tampa. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. Let me read a few other news stories. I think I've got a technical problem here. The House in Washington is poised to release a landmark impeachment report outlining evidence of what it calls President Trump's wrongdoing toward Ukraine. findings that will push Congress toward a debate over whether Trump should be removed from office. Democrats on the Intelligence Committee are making the case that Trump engaged in behavior that violated his oath of office, while Republicans insist the president never intended to pressure Ukraine when he asked for a favor. The report is being released today. It lays the foundation for articles of impeachment and sets up a test of political judgment that's dividing Congress and the country. And a federal prosecutor says an upgraded indictment is likely against two Rudy Giuliani associates, the men from the former Soviet Union who immigrated to South Florida, have helped the campaigns of several Republicans in Florida, including Governor DeSantis and Governor Rick Scott. Well, yesterday, the U.S. Navy awarded its most expensive shipbuilding contract ever, more than $22.2 billion worth of submarines. The massive contract for nine nuclear-powered Virginia-class attack submarines comes just months after the head of the U.S. Navy in the Pacific warned of a Chinese Navy buildup in the Western Pacific off the coast of China. Nearly 200,000 Florida students would no longer get free lunch at school under changes proposed by the Trump administration that would limit the number of people enrolled in the federal food stamps program known as SNAP. Tampa Bay Times is reporting that the Department of Agriculture wants to take flexibility away from the states in determining who is eligible. That could end SNAP benefits for 328,000 people in Florida and 3 million people nationwide. Children could get hit twice because SNAP also makes them eligible to receive free school lunches. That could affect tens of thousands of children in Hernando, Hillsborough, Pasco, Polk, Pinellas, Manatee, and Sarasota counties. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. One of President Trump's strongest supporters, California Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter, says he plans to plead guilty to misusing campaign funds and is prepared to go to jail. It's a stunning turn of events for the six-term Republican who steadfastly denied wrongdoing and claimed he was the victim of a political witch hunt by federal prosecutors. Hunter had pleaded not guilty, but in an interview that aired yesterday, says he's going to change his plea today in San Diego. He said his motivation is to protect his children from going through a trial. And it may not feel like it today in Tampa, but the UN Weather Agency says that the current decade is likely to set a new 10-year temperature record, adding other further evidence that the world is getting hotter. The World Meteorological Organization said today that preliminary temperature data shows the years from 2015 to 2019 and from 2010 to 2019 are respectively almost certain to be the warmest five-year period on record and the warmest decade on record. North Korea has repeated its assertions that the Trump administration is running out of time to salvage nuclear negotiations and says it's entirely up to the U.S. to choose what Christmas gift it gets from the North. The statement comes as North Korea continues to dial up pressure on Washington and Seoul ahead of leader Kim Jong-un's end-of-the-year deadline for the U.S. to accept terms for a new nuclear deal. And a Florida high-speed passenger train service tied to Richard Branson's Virgin Group has the worst per-mile death rate in the U.S. The first death involving a Brightline train on Florida's East Coast happened in July 2017 during test runs. An Associated Press analysis of Federal Railroad Administration data shows that since then, 40 more people have been killed. That amounts to a rate of more than one person a month and about one for every 29,000 miles the trains have traveled since the first death. Well, those are some of the stories that we could talk about. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's open up the phones and see where people want to take this conversation. We'll see what's on your mind. Let's go to Dave, who's calling in Tampa. Hey, Dave, you're on WMNF. What would you like to talk about?
Hey, good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Yeah, I listened to that interview. It was a good interview. And, you know, I'm an old school newspaper guy. I subscribe. I still get two newspapers delivered to my house. And I'm completely sympathetic to that industry and to the mission of journalism. But the thing I don't hear that bothers me, especially from an organization that's affiliated with the Poynter Institute, which is in a unique position to innovate, I don't hear them talking about what they're going to do to disrupt where we are now. Their business model has been dying for decades. And that industry as a whole, I'm not just pointing to the Tampa Bay Times, that industry as a whole was slow to react. They just sat on fat profits coming in from their advertising and did not see what was coming down the track. They failed to respond when they should have. And then once it was plain to see, they still continued to try to prop up an old, dying business model rather than innovate. And that's my criticism of them. I think they need to completely change their mentality and come up with new, entirely new forms of not just journalism, but how it's delivered. What they need to do is disrupt Facebook and Twitter and the cable channels with some new form of delivery. And it's probably going to take some experimentation. And I'm critical of the Poynter Institute because that's what their mission is to some extent. When you look at these, like a Knight Ridder, the giant chains, they're just sucking profits out of local papers. That model's dying, and they're going to be dead in about 20 or 30 years. The Poynter Institute ought to be innovating. They ought to be the ones that are trying new forms of delivery, new forms of journalism, participatory journalism, bringing in the community, all entirely new ways of doing things. And maybe they'll hit on something and they can revive journalism in this country. But to simply sit there and say and lament your dying business model and expect somebody to come along and try to prop them up out of the goodness of their heart is foolhardy and short-sighted and irresponsible. And I think they are due some pretty heavy criticism on that point.
The Poynter people aren't here to defend themselves. Just as an outsider, this is what I look at. I think that discussion about why newspapers are declining probably goes on inside that the Poynter Institute 24/7, and probably has gone on in every newspaper that we know, and the newspapers that you worked at for the last 10 years since the decline started and the digital age really kicked in. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, Mark during the interview said we're trying podcasts. I know they do a short video and they want to do more video. They do roundtable discussions. They send out newsletters now. You can get the paper delivered to your phone in the morning at 6 or 7 a.m. and all the newspapers on the phone if you're a subscriber. So I think they are trying new modes, but you would go even beyond what they're trying now.
Yeah, and there are models in other parts of the world. That's my criticism. I don't think they're paying attention to what, maybe they are, but I don't see it from where I sit. And of course, I can't see inside the Poynter Institute, but I would think that he might have mentioned some of them if they were on the table, if they were coming or had been discussed or something was imminent. And you can look around the world and see where there's civic technologies have been deployed in other countries, and they're doing things that are really very fascinating and lend themselves very well to journalism, and they gain mass audience. And I don't think they're looking beyond their own shores. If they are, it's not evident.
Well, Dave, as a former newspaper guy, maybe you could go down to the Poynter and talk with them and give them your ideas.
Yeah, I probably will write him a letter. I just wanted to get on the air. I commend you for interviewing. I think it's really, obviously, it's critical to our democracy. I think it's the most important issue we face right now, this, fake news and propaganda and the way it has divided us. This might be the most critical thing going.
Yeah, I always laugh because, the same people that are saying fake news, when the news goes their way and they like something from a mainstream outlet, then it's no longer fake. If CNN reports something that the fake news crowd believes, then they're all in favor of it. So it all depends on what the content of the news is. It's not the fake news crowd will go either way. So
yeah, right. Well, that might not be the right word, but I think what you just division that cleave, if you will, is I think the most serious problem we're facing. But like I said, there are models out there where this problem is being bridged, where you have online presence out there, you have systems out there.
Well,
facts are brought in, and people are able to actually agree to some extent on a set of facts, and then go from there.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Thanks a lot. Write the Poynter and let us know what they said to you. Okay. Thanks, Dave. 813-239-9663. I mean, this story will go back 20 or 30 years, and it was true until recently, but usually what happened in a TV newsroom in the morning at 9 or 10 a.m. for the first news meeting of the day when your local TV station was trying to decide what to do with the noon newscast and what to do with the 6 p.m. newscast and what to do with the 11 p.m. newscast. One of the things that all the young producers and reporters would have to do was to have read all the local newspapers in their community, their daily newspapers, and then come to that newsroom meeting and pitch story ideas. Well, what should we do? And usually it was a follow-up to what was in the newspaper that day. So oftentimes, if you got the newspaper in the morning, let's say you got the morning newspaper, and you looked at the 12 noon newscast on your local CBS or NBC or ABC station, or looked at the 6 p.m. newscast, probably of the 10 minutes of news they might carry, maybe 5 or 6 minutes of it was based on what the newspaper had reported overnight in that morning. And that's because newspapers can uncover things that are going on at city council. They can uncover things that are going on at the school board and all the other organizations, the courts, because they're able to send a reporter there. And a TV newsroom might have 30 reporters and photographers in it, whereas back in the day, a good, healthy newspaper newsroom, especially the Tampa Tribune or the St. Pete Times back in the day, might have had 200 people in their newsroom, and they had plenty of people that they could spread out over the Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco, Polk, Manatee County areas, although they didn't interfere too much with the Lakeland Ledger or the Bradenton Herald, but certainly up in Pasco County, they both did a war, and they could find out what's going on. That the newspaper, they had enough people that the TV stations weren't able to cover all the angles that a newspaper was able to do. A newspaper was able to send people out to all the important organizations and find stories. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And today is a national day, Give Day 2019. WMNF is participating, and we urge you to support your favorite charity, your favorite nonprofit. And it could be us. And so if you want to make a contribution to WMNF, you can go to WMNF.org and make a contribution. We are hoping to raise $10,000 today. And we're seeing a lot of donations come in, but we're hoping that you will make a contribution, especially if you haven't made a contribution to WMNF this year. 813-239-9663. There's a lot of other good charities out there, too. So if you don't choose to make a contribution to WMNF, we hope that you'll donate to your favorite museum or your favorite religious organization or your favorite nonprofit group. And there are many, many out there. Let's go to John in Tampa. Hey, John, you're on MNF. What's up?
Hi, Rob. I just have the urge to call. Excuse me. I called 2 or 3 weeks ago about this situation in Iraq with the protesters being mowed down by our machine guns and people in our uniforms and our vehicles. These people are protesting for clean water and electricity after how many years of traumatic war caused by us. And we, the taxpayers of the United States, are mowing down these protesters. I'm sad to report that when I called a few weeks ago, it was 200 some odd people dead. And God knows how many wounded. Now it's close to 400. And this is continuing to happen. I don't know why I feel the urge to call the station and just tell the listeners, but it's not getting much press.
Well, Amy Goodman did a lot on it last week when it was happening.
Well, I missed that. I can't listen every minute, but I try. But
I think the NPR News has been pretty good about giving us updates about those protests.
Yes,
although
they have.
In the first few days, I think they were ignored, but NPR headlines were pretty good after the first few days.
Yeah, I guess my secondary and final point would be that, yeah, we just heard an NPR reporter, and I think it was on your show, too, that, what is it now? Oh, I think I lost my train of thought. You know, I'm just a regular person. I'm not Rob Lurie. Some of us callers, we have the brain freeze, and I know you get it, too. But
I get it a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right, John, thanks a lot.
Anyway, last point there. I think I remembered it. they're cutting the school food programs for poor kids. I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I just mentioned that. It's on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times today. The headline says 200,000 Florida kids at risk of losing free lunch, school lunch, rather. And this is because of the cuts to the food stamp program.
And we can't afford that, and yet we're buying, I also heard, what, $10, $15 billion in new submarines?
Yeah, the Navy just ordered 8 new submarines at $22 billion. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
You know, people say, have a nice day. Well, I'm going to try, but it's getting hard, Rob.
All right, John. John, you'll survive this. All right, John, thank you. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Len in St. Petersburg. Hi, Len. You're on MNF. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having the information about Tampa Bay Times on. I think there's an issue that I have not seen mentioned in the press that's really important. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to explain how important it is or urgent, but basically it's sort of like disappearing news or erasing history. When you Google a name or you search the Tampa Bay Times directly on their site, the only articles from the last 4 years appear. Did you know that?
Yeah, that was one of the questions I was going to ask Mark, too. But go ahead. Yeah, I do know that.
So that means, so I'll give you the most extreme example first. I wanted to write a little report. And I'm not saying the news is impossible to get to, but I'm saying it's impossible to get to easily, okay? So I wanted to go back the last 10 years of all the times the Florida legislature put up barriers to constitutional initiatives and changing the rules for petitions. And I couldn't remember the dates and so on, although I'm pretty conscious of that history. So I couldn't find any, I couldn't link up a little blog entry about the last 10 years because everything over 4 years old has been essentially erased from history. Now, if a private company buys those archives and makes the paywall, which this is the PDF paywall for old archives, I think it's $8 a month or something, if they could raise that to $10,000, they could literally erase all of our history. So when you Google my name, for example, I ran in 2009, there's a handful of articles. Only the site on the stpete.org website shows up. You can even Google another extreme example is Howard Troxler himself, one of our famous columnists. His articles are gone, and he wrote for the paper. So I think we should find the archives and put them in the public domain.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. Michelle Bearden was a former writer for the Tampa Tribune, and she was on the show a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about Paula White, and she told me, and I didn't know this until she said this to me, that she was trying to get her old articles, investigative reports about Paula White, and she was trying to get them out of the Times archives. The Tampa Bay Times bought the Tampa Tribune. You can't get those old articles, she said. And I believe her. So the history of her investigative reporting for the Tampa Tribune is now lost unless somehow you're able to get past whatever restrictions there are. I think, frankly, this is a job for the University of South Florida. They should have free available archives that you can digitally scrutinize for free as part of their public collection in their library. And I think that should be available to the public. I've got a good friend. Gary Mormino is a former historian. He's a retired guy at USF St. Pete. And he writes a lot of books. What he does it the old-fashioned way. He used to go through the microfiche files and look at old Tampa Tribune articles and St. Pete Times articles. And I think the microfiche is still there. So you can go through and laboriously go through the roles. I don't know if you've ever done that, but it takes a long time. There's no way to cross-check it. There's no way to search it digitally. And Gary comes up with some great books based on that kind of research. But I think the modern way to do research is digital. So yes, USF, the special collections there at the library should take over the Tribune archives, make them available, take over the Times archives, make them available for historians and for people like you that are trying to piece together what happened in recent history.
So what happens to the intellectual property copyright? Right.
Well, I don't know, but it would be a horrible thought to think that somebody's going to grab our history, which is recorded in newspapers, and try to monetize it so that people would have to pay money to find our history. Let's hope that the people that own the property now, and that is the Tampa Bay Times and the Poynter Institute, they own access to these old newspaper archives. Let's hope that they make them available to everybody.
Well, I think one consideration also would be for people who want to extend corporate property rights is that every city, as far as I know, in the state, and there was all this goodwill leased, given to the newspapers for the newspaper boxes and just to sort of give our public infrastructure as much as possible because the newspapers provided such a valuable service. In return, I believe the people own those archives. That's our history, and that somehow that's got to go back to public domain and soon. I thought Google was working on some type of thing where they're.
I think you can get it through LexisNexis, but you got to pay through the nose to get those archives. And law firms and rich people have access to LexisNexis. Most of us can't afford it. I think they are there, but you got to pay a price. But Len, it's a good point, and you may want to start a movement.
I think you need to help kick it off with
okay.
a full show on this.
All right,
some examples and show people how serious this is. Thank you so much, Rob.
Thanks, Len. Okay, thanks. Well, we did talk about it a few weeks ago. I don't know if any other radio stations talked about it, but I'm pretty sure we were the first to broach that topic when Michelle Bearden was on a few weeks ago. Let's go to John in St. Pete. Hey, John, you're on M&F.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just want to bring up, you know, I was a lifelong resident of St. Pete. I remember the Evening Independent and how the Times used to be. It used to be a thick newspaper, and now it's barely four pages on the city and state. And it seems to me like, you know, through all the digital age we're in, that we get too much information. And we're so inundated that we are almost, I don't know, numb to really important things, and we get caught up in more opinion than fact. As a child, I can remember we had, Walter Cronkite. All three networks basically would give you the same spin on events happening. And now it's become all opinion rather than fact. And it's become so blurred that I think everybody's just overwhelmed by news.
By opinion, maybe.
Well, it's made into almost like it's news. And we didn't have that when we had Walter Cronkite and Huntley and Brinkley. And I remember Watergate. You know, you pretty much got the same reporting from whoever you looked at as factual. And today, the same event will have three or four spins on it.
You know, I think that's true, especially for national news and the debate about impeachment. I think there's a ton being written about that. But what's being written about your local road system, for instance? I mean, I was driving on the roads yesterday, noticed potholes where there hadn't been any before. And I'm wondering now, who's in charge of that road where all these potholes are, and why isn't being repaired? And why are some roads and I'm talking about Hillsborough County now, why are some roads in Hillsborough County in such poor shape? And when are they going to be fixed? The local issues, I think, are off the, they're really off the map. So, for instance, we have more traffic jams here in the Tampa, Sarasota, St. Pete, Lakeland area than ever before in anyone's life. And nobody on Tampa City Council, Hillsborough County Commission, Pinellas County Commission is taking a leadership role to say, here's the solution. Nobody's coming up to say, here's my 10-point plan to fix the massive traffic jams that we go through every morning and every afternoon here in the Tampa Bay area. That's a huge problem. And the newspapers aren't there to champion it. They have transportation reporters at the newspaper. But we don't have any sort of leadership on transportation here in the Tampa Bay area. Nobody's able to corral people up and say, this is the way we should go. We've got a huge problem. Nobody likes to spend an hour getting to work when their job is only five miles away. That's a role that could be solved if you had a strong local newspaper that could advocate for transportation solutions. And that's what's missing. We may get a lot of opinions about impeachment, but we don't get enough opinions about how to fix local problems.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I know the St. Pete Times had, I don't know how many Pulitzer Prize-winning reporters that really exposed a lot through in-depth coverage.
Yeah, and John, I hate to say we're out of time, but John, thanks a lot. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF Tampa.